Who is taking care of you? As a pastor, ministry leader, church staff member, are you being cared for? We'll talk about that today.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
Well, hey guys, welcome to the podcast. I have some really exciting news to share with you this week. As some of you might know, we have partnered with Seeds Family Worship for almost a decade now, helping them create word-for-word scripture songs and videos for churches and families. And those videos have been used worldwide. It's amazing the stories and the impact that we've seen God do with these songs and with these videos. It's to word-for-word scripture. So it's amazing. We'll see international stories of these songs and videos being used for the sake of the gospel so that young ones and adults as well can learn scripture and store it in their heart. So I wanted to let you know that Seeds will be merging with 1230 in a greater partnership this year. So you're going to start seeing and hearing things this year about our partnership with the Seeds team and how we're coming together as one team under the 1230 banner. So you're also going to start seeing some new brands. We are building a student ministry brand called 1230 Students that will be launching this year, and we'll be working on some other really big, exciting projects that you don't want to miss out on. So keep listening to the podcast and keep following us for more. I'll try to drop information as I have it along the year to let you know about the exciting projects that we're working on. So thank you so much for your support, and we hope that our ministry is a help to you and your church as you make Sunday happen, as you build, create, execute your worship experiences at your church. Well, today on the show, I welcome Thad Austin and Katie Colmay from the Orman Center at Duke Divinity School. They have done an immense amount of research on how pastors and leaders are cared for, why folks are leaving the ministry, and what we can do to care for pastors and leaders. We'll give some biblical background on caring for leaders. We'll examine why it matters that pastors are cared for. We'll look at what types of networks support pastors and more. That's all coming up right after this.
Hey guys, Grant Murphy here from the 1230 team. I want to let you know about the heart behind our Go Unlimited subscription plan on our website. We're on a mission to help you make Sunday happen at your church. Our ready-made media is a solution for you to plug and play pre-made media right into your presentation software and be ready to go for Sunday. All of our graphics come with a Photoshop design file for you to edit the text to say whatever you need to say for your context. Our library is packed with mini movies and service openers, countdowns, motion backgrounds, social media content, fully branded series boxes, collections of coordinated media for the holidays and special events, and more. Our Go Unlimited plan is only $33 a month when you pay annually, and you get everything in the library, and I mean all of it. Plus, for the whole year you're subscribed, you get everything we add to the library, and we're adding dozens of products every single month. It is our heart that if you can't do custom media with us, or need a quick solution to fill in the gaps for your Sunday service, our ready-made media library is a solution for you. Get started today at 1230media/go. That's 1230.media/go to get started today.
Hey guys, thanks so much for joining us today. I welcome Thad Austin and Katie Comeau. Thad is the Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives and Congregational Engagement at Duke Divinity's Orman Center. And Katie is a Research Associate at the Orman Center as well. Thad, Katie, welcome. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So you guys have authored a new book called Caring for Clergy, Understanding a Disconnected Network of Providers. The book is available now. Thad, why don't you get us started here? Give me some background maybe on you. What do you guys do at the Orman Center, and maybe how this book kind of came about for you guys?
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having us. And so my name's Thad Austin. I served in pastoral ministry for just over a decade and then went back to school and have really been captivated by two particular questions. So those questions are fully associated with who are our leaders and what are the resources that they have to do their work. I am very intensely called to help support formational institutions. And obviously, being a product of the church, being a pastor myself, the most important formational institution that I think is out there is the local church. We know that there have been a number of pastors and church staff members that have had a really rough go during the pandemic. And so what we've been interested in understanding are, well, what's out there to help support ministry leaders? What's out there to help support our pastors? What's the network that's out there, and what does it look like? So, in the midst of the pandemic, we saw that there were a number of ministry leaders that were struggling, and we said we want to help to better kind of understand what type of support is available for those leaders.
Good, very good, and I totally agree. And we'll get into this definitely, but the stats of folks leaving the ministry, burnout, and just don't know, how to serve, or I mean, it's all new. That you know, some of them during the pandemic was a lose-lose for them. They couldn't please everybody, no matter what decision that they make. So I definitely think the pandemic has intensified that struggle a little bit. Katie, tell me a little bit about how the book came about for you guys, and why did you choose to do research on those who care for clergy and pastors?
Yeah, so I have my PhD in sociology from Notre Dame and came to join Mormon Center over a year and a half ago to work on this project. And it was birthed out of this idea that we know a lot about the factors that lead to clergy well-being or clergy burnout on the other end of that, but we don't know a lot about who is the support network that is helping to support and lift up clergy and their ministry. So we launched a research project, a survey, interviews, case studies to better understand who's in that field and what are their key challenges and hopes and goals for supporting pastors, so that in that way we can help to encourage them to improve the care that they provide for clergy. So
we'll dive into this more, but Katie, what was something that you, is there anything that you were surprised with, you know, in maybe you thought one thing, but you did research and you saw, wow, something totally different?
Yeah, something that surprised me was how many former pastors are in this field. Over 70% of the people who are caring for pastors were pastors themselves. And that has a tremendous effect on how they understand their calling to care for clergy, as well as some of the previous trauma and wounds that they bring into caring for pastors as well. But on the other hand, too, they are much more empathetic to what pastors are going through and can develop a trusting relationship with the people that they're supporting.
So Thad, let's talk about who cares for clergy, and let's maybe define some terms here. As far as clergy or pastors, are you guys including additional staff members as well? So if I'm on a church staff as a worship leader or an executive pastor, let's say something like that, or did you guys just focus on the senior leader?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and one that we spent a lot of time thinking through. In fact, we've got an entire whiteboard trying to just define what constitutes a clergy person, or how do we think about who is in ministry? So do you have to be ordained or not? Do student pastors count? I mean, we went through our chaplains part of what we're interested in. So as we looked at it, we wanted to make sure that we had a very clear understanding of ministry leaders that were involved in supporting the work of local congregations. So just as an example, I'm ordained, I served in pastoral ministry, but I'm not currently leading in the context of a congregation. So I wouldn't kind of count or be qualified to be thinking about what's my support system. Instead, we were really interested where the work is actually happening within the context of congregations. So when we're thinking about those that care for clergy, we were kind of looking across many different sectors. So we know that there are denominational officials, or in some contexts, there are non-denominational networks and associations that are really important for those that are everybody from the youth pastor all the way up to the senior level leadership. We know that in addition, there are funders that provide substantial dollars that are granting towards programs and services that help to support those in ministry. The next group of supporters that we were interested in looking at are those that are in the pension benefit and insurance space. Now, these can be either denominationally affiliated, Portico for the Lutherans, the Board of Pensions for the PCUSA, Guidestone would be mm-hmm. another mm-hmm. that I know would be very familiar to a number of your listeners. But then there are also non-denominational insurance and pension benefit providers. A great example of this would be Brotherhood Mutual, which even though it's not specifically, it's birthed out of a denomination, but they don't just serve one particular denominational body. They basically pick up a lot of the folks that are in the non-denominational context. The next group were frontline providers. So here we were thinking about everybody from spiritual directors, retreat center providers, the counselors, coaches, marriage and family therapists, just a whole wide range of folks that you know, even people like licensed clinical social workers that could come alongside and help support those in ministry. And then the last group that we were thinking about are the continuing education providers. And the way that we identified this group was through conversation with somebody at the Association of Theological Schools. Katie and I have a great friend and colleague there named Joanne Deasy, who looked at our first four categories of different types of supporters, and she said, "I think you're missing something." And we said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Well, in my experience, the first call that someone in ministry makes when they get to a dry point is not to the spiritual director, counselor, or coach, but instead they pick up the phone and they sign up for a doctor of ministry program or some other form of continuing education." That in other words, when we get to a dry spiritual place, oftentimes we seek out the place where maybe we felt most alive before, which might have been during our theological formation, or maybe we think about going and pursuing additional education. And so we started calling around to different doctor of ministry programs as well as continuing education programs across the country. And one after another, these folks told us about how much their job is not just in terms of instruction, but also helping to keep people in ministry, to actually support them in the work that they're doing. So that's a little bit about kind of the type of clergy or pastor or minister that we've been thinking about, and then also thinking about the supporters of these groups as well.
So Thad, let's step back for a second and maybe deal with the biblical basis for why I should care for leaders. Give me some biblical context here.
Yeah, so the cover of our book probably illustrates it the best. On the cover of our book, we have a woodcut image of Moses, Aaron, and Hur. So you'll remember from Exodus chapter 17, where Moses is leading the children of Israel in battle with arms raised, and Aaron and Hur come alongside to lift up and support the arms of Moses. We've been asking this basic question of who are Aaron and Hur today? Where are they located? What are they doing? And how and why does their support matter? Especially as there are a number of ministry leaders that have had it rough during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. From whence cometh their help? Obviously, it comes from God, but also that help is embodied in people as well that are providing support. So as I think about the kind of consequences of this support, it's so incredibly important Just think in terms of Exodus 17. If Aaron and Hur were not there that day, then what would have been the impact on the battle that raged in the valley below? Might Joshua have actually lost the battle? And then what would the implications have been for the people of God for generations? I mean, it could have delayed their entrance into the promised land. It could have changed the formation of the Davidic kingdom. I mean, the implications of clergy not receiving support, even from a biblical standpoint, are massive, and they are just as important today.
So, Katie, bring us into that. Why does it matter today? And even with what we've seen the last couple of years, why does clergy support, caring for pastors, why have such a network to respond to that need?
Yeah, so just, you know, continuing it on to today, we at the Ormond Center in particular believe in, we strive to seek the shalom of communities in the United States. And part of reaching that goal, we believe congregations play a key role in doing that. And, you know, just taking a step back, we think that you cannot have a healthy congregation if you don't have a healthy leader. And so leadership is really important. You know, just like Thad was sharing from his biography earlier, with the importance of leadership and what we do. And so that means that to, you know, you don't have healthy leaders just living in isolation. They have a network around them who's helping to support them, to cheer them on and encourage them through the difficult times that we've been having in the last couple of years.
Good. Yeah. And Carl, let me just kind of add on to Katie's great comments to say that we don't believe that the work of pastors is somehow just way more important than some other vocations.
Good point.
I mean, we firmly believe in a priesthood of all believers. And if I think back, you know, I know that there are a lot of my friends and colleagues in ministry that have had it rough during the pandemic. But then I think about my other friends and colleagues that are in the healthcare industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've had it just as bad, if not way worse. Right. And so we're not saying that the work of pastors or ministry leaders is somehow like unduly elevated above other types of vocations where God might call leaders. But we are saying that pastoral leaders have an incredibly important role in the kingdom of heaven. And if they're not healthy and if they're not supported, then there are profound implications for our religious institutions and also the work of the kingdom of God.
Yeah, and go ahead, Katie.
All right, I'll just add to that. One of the reasons we chose the sectors that Thad listed earlier with the pension benefits, the frontline providers, continuing education providers, is that, you know, there's a lot of support for pastors that all of us in churches do on the local level. But these people and organizations that we studied, they control the systemic levers to help clergy. So there are resources that they're availability to use that, you know, we just being lay members might not have at our access. So that's why they're very important in, you know, shaping the well-being of pastors throughout the nation.
Yeah, good. Thad, I'm going to go off the beaten path a little bit because we've mentioned COVID, we've mentioned the pandemic, but obviously, support for pastors was needed long before the pandemic. So maybe let's talk about over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, there's been multiple stories of whether that's big name pastors or, you know, people that we've looked up to, respected, have had some type of moral failure or things have come out about them. So was that included in your research, or how do you frame those? We don't have to mention names here, but, you know, large church mega pastors fallen. I served at a church that was the case for. So maybe kind of walk me out any thoughts that you have about that and how it applies to your research.
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly the context, and COVID is the most kind of immediate presenting factor, kind of trying to understand. I mean, there are some of my friends who are serving in pastoral ministry who are talking about their, you know, worship being down 40% prior to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we're talking about massive cultural shifts and changes in the way that religious individuals here in the United States are practicing. But the cracks that we have identified, they were present prior to. So COVID is only amplifying and bringing into very crisp kind of vision the things that were already present. I mean, we've heard the podcast about, mm-hmm. you know, congregations that have risen and fallen. We have, I mean, even prior to the pandemic, the Billy Graham Center hosted an entire conference on clergy suicide because there had been so many high profile leaders of our, you know, major churches that had taken their own life.
Yeah.
So you know, this kind of comes within the context of a larger story, which is what you're getting at. And, you know, if we look at, you know, different studies of clergy well-being, like the ones that Katie was alluding to earlier, what you'll find is that overall clergy tend to be overweight. They tend to have higher instances of high blood pressure and heart-related illness. We find that they are often underpaid. So oftentimes, you know, you get in the situation where you might have to seek out, as a condition of employment, theological education. You go into massive debt, and then you enter a profession where it is actually impossible to ever get out of that debt, even if you're managing your funds correctly. And so, you know, all of these kind of factors come together. We have this massive event called the COVID-19 pandemic, and it brings all of these things into very sharp contrast. So that's some of the larger context that we're dealing with. Those studies that I was alluding to earlier, they would suggest that if you were doing well prior to the pandemic, then you're probably doing okay now. But if you were struggling before the pandemic, life is really rough. And if you are borderline, this is the kind of the warning signs. So, you know, you can probably see this, in so many different areas, but the one that comes most clearly to my mind is I got a targeted Facebook ad during the pandemic. And this targeted Facebook ad was for ministers. And it said, "Are you tired of ministry? Are you tired of late night meetings? Are you tired of the infighting and political polarization?" And then it came and basically was trying to pitch to me to become an executive coach. And I was thinking about this. I was like, what type of situation, what type of vocational environment do we have to be in within the context of the church that there is an industry that has identified that clergy make good executive coaches, and second, that they would pay money, that there would be a targeted fate, like there is a market for people leaving the ministry. So that's why we were really interested in understanding, well, so how are we supporting our religious leaders?
Yep. Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Katie, Thad mentioned earlier just some cracks, the cracks that we saw even before the pandemic. Let's identify, maybe you can start with this, and Thad, feel free to pick up. What are some of those cracks? So if I'm a pastor, if I'm a church staff member, what are some things that I need to be looking for in myself to go, maybe some self-assessment here? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, one of, burnout and chronic illness are definitely kind of the key indicators that we see of the poor health amongst clergy. And some of the factors that our providers that we studied are looking into with this is trying to help church cultures to adjust their expectations for their pastors, because they find that, there's a lot of, like, the theology of putting pastors onto pedestals and sort of you know, making the pastor the hero is really not helping pastors very well.
Why not? Drill into that for me. Why is it not healthy?
It creates a complex in which then it's hard for pastors to become vulnerable, to be vulnerable with their congregation members or with people outside of their congregation, because you know, you get driven by these sort of more corporate measures of success and having numbers and, you know, money in the bank. And when you don't, have that, or if it's not as much as, you know, a pastor down the street, then it says something about your efficacy, your calling, your ministry as a pastor. When really we want to change the conversation of, you know, into one of, you know, how are they discipling and also modeling, you know, what it means to take care of yourself as a child of God and to live that out amongst their congregation.
Good. Yeah. And from a theological standpoint, I would call it a Messiah complex.
Right.
Right. You know, if it all is falling upon you, then what really is the role of God, and why is Jesus necessary? You know, like I've known a lot of people, and I've even been guilty of this myself, of taking it all on me. Mm-hmm. And it all is dependent upon me and not actually dependent on the Spirit that works in and among us.
So your research backed that up as you guys dove into this. You and maybe I should ask it this way. You know, sometimes I see three things, and I want to see if your research backs this up, like money, sex, power. Those three things, I can kind of point to those three areas as it's probably one of those three. Probably a problem with one of those three is why this certain person fell or why there's a problem here. Did your research back that up, or how do those things support or conflict with your research?
Yeah, I mean, one of the, you know, with our research, we were really looking at what are providers doing to address these issues. So what problems do they diagnose, and then how are they adapting to meet those needs and challenges that the pastors are facing? And similarly, we, whatever kind of activity need that they're providing for, it is addressing in a lot of ways problems with their mental and emotional health, with the pastor's mental and emotional health that can be affected by that drive for money, for success, or power, and also critically their spiritual formation. So our providers really want to see pastors having more of a Christ-centered identity and not one that is kind of more worldly in how it's thinking about its success.
Yeah, and that goes all the way from those type of large-scale systemic structures that deal with big ideas such as money, sex, and power, down to very mundane choices that we make, like how much and what should I eat off of this potluck line? You know, there's this pitch-in where, you know, the congregation's got all this fried food and the level of expectations that, you know, so it's all...
If I don't eat Betty's fried chicken, there might be some, she might look at me differently.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it's all the way from those big kind of structures down to really small individual choices, or what time do I go home, or how do I say no, or, you know, how and in what ways do I spend time with my family versus with the congregation when both of them have needs? How do I allocate my time? You know, all of it. So it's those big things, and then it's the really little things as well.
And I'll just add to that, the providers that we studied, they, you know, while this moment has produced a lot of challenges for pastors, they see this as also a critical turning moment in which, because there's been such, you know, ruptures for the church, for our communities, that it gives us an opportunity to change that culture of how we think about success or, you know, our sort of identities right now, and to really redefine them in being a church that cares more about following God and walking in step with Him rather than the ways of the world.
Thad, let me ask you this. Do you think, crazy question here, right? Do you think that we've structured the church the wrong way in the last, let's say, 20 or 30 years? Does the mega church multi-site campus model, is that setting us up for an unhealthy environment based on your research? Or what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And I'll be speaking more so out of my own just kind of personal reflection than necessarily our research in this. I would say that, you know, we're at an interesting historical moment where the church is beginning to grapple with things such as, you know, building and its use. We're beginning to grapple with more money being given by fewer and fewer individuals. So if you look at the kind of the number of raw dollars that are being received by congregations in America, there's more money being given to congregations right now than there's ever been given at any point in time since we've been keeping records. And you can look at the Giving USA statistics to see that trend. But that money is being given by fewer and fewer individuals. I think that the core questions that the church is, or at least should be, asking right now are the exact same questions that the first century church was asking. So what does it mean to be in community? And how do we do that well in a society where there is incredible difference? How and with whom can I partner? Who is my neighbor and how can I serve them? Or who is off limits? Who can I not serve? Questions of how and in what ways am I going to hold on versus give away? Right. I mean, these are the same questions that the first century Christians were dealing with. And so although our context is changed, the questions are still the basic questions. What does it mean to be a community of faith? And how do we live faithfully in the midst of this changing environment?
So I want to quote some stats from the book, and then I want to kind of get into where do we go from here? How do we kind of work for some work to some solutions? So in the book, you cite a 2015 Lifeway study of evangelical pastors, rather, that said that 54% of pastors agreed that their role was frequently overwhelming. 48% agreed that the demands of ministry are more than they can handle. That's almost 50% of people. That was in 2015. And in 2021, those numbers increased to 63% and 50% respectively, showing that pastors face increasing challenges in ministry. So 50%, and Katie, feel free to speak to this. 50% of pastors feel like they're, and maybe we should include some church staff in there as well, that you guys had articulated that it's more than the senior leader. So 50% of ministry leaders are saying that they're overwhelmed. Their job is too overwhelming for them.
Yeah, well, one of the, you know, other surprising aspects of our research that stood out to us that, you know, relates to that is that a lot of our providers don't prioritize caring for the relational needs of pastors and other staff members. And so when you're not caring for those relational needs, you have pastors, and repeatedly, you know, we saw, heard them talking about this, that they feel isolated. They feel like they don't have people to reach out to. And this can be exacerbated in COVID when you don't have, when you're not able to see people as often or, you know, as long as you want to be able to. And so, yeah, so that isolation then is feeding into, you know, not having people to talk to and to ask about, you know, how to deal with this aspect of ministry, or, you know, people that you can rely on and trust to address challenges that come up.
So is it lonely at the top?
It's lonely, yes, isolated.
Thad, I want to talk about a Barna study. In October 2021, you guys found that 38% of pastors seriously consider quitting full-time ministry. So 38% as of October of 2021. So what reasons did you find that pastors either just like we talked about, felt, you know, I'm no longer up to the task of leading my church, so much so I want to quit, 38%.
Yeah, this particular finding from Barna has gotten a lot of play. It doesn't matter your news source, whether it's Fox News to the New York Times to a religious news source. A lot of folks have been talking about this particular stat. I should qualify that one of our colleagues at Hartford, who's been doing some work on this particular topic, Scott Thuma, who's a sociologist of religion, he has been finding that although there might have been kind of the consideration of possible departure, those that are actually kind of, like the disciples, to whom else should I go? But still, even if that's the case, you've got a lot of folks that are in a situation where they're not happy or excited, or the feeling of calling is gone.
Yeah,
that's not like, to whom else should I go? That's not like what you want in terms of
They might not have actually quit, but they're certainly not excited to get up in the morning.
Right. Yeah. And so, the causes that are often cited for this particular statistic have to do with congregational infighting, no-win scenarios related to political polarization. So mask or no mask, it doesn't matter your decision. Half the congregation is going to love you and half the congregation is going to hate you. Mm-hmm. I think that this kind of is reflective of a kind of a larger sense of a lack of decorum within our political discourse, the politicalization of many of our congregations. So you're either blue or red, and if you're purple or the other team, then I'm not going to follow you. You're not part of the body of Christ. There are also, underlying health concerns, like what we've talked before. During the pandemic, especially among smaller congregations that, they didn't have a live stream. The pandemic was incredibly tough upon those smaller congregations. It all of a sudden had to pivot. So you got an increased workload. How are you a shepherd when you can't be with your flock? All of those kind of things then lead to people like me getting targeted Facebook ads saying there's a more regular schedule that executive coaching can offer you, right? Which, leads us away from kind of our first and true calling to something else. So those are some of the major issues that folks are dealing with.
So Katie, where do we go from here? What does your network provide? What have you found as some solutions to this problem?
Well, one of what we're trying to encourage providers to go from here is in our title. We understand this to be a disconnected network of providers. And, certainly over the last few years, they're even more disconnected as we get into our silos, and social media helps with this, denominational differences factors into this. But we believe that through connection and collaboration together, we can, just be friends and encourage each other, but then also through those friendships and relationships, produce innovative solutions to what we're all dealing with and struggling with. So that's, the key is collaboration and connection moving forward.
Good. So Thad, let's wrap up here. Let's talk about maybe money. Where does the funding come from for support for pastors?
Yeah, so this is a great question. And it's a little bit of a black box, in part because there has been a longstanding tradition of separation of church and state that we have here in America. So unlike places such as Canada, where congregations file 990s or their equivalent, they file with the government to say, here's how our finances work. Most congregations here in the U.S. don't do that. So we were not able to investigate the flow of money within many of the denominational or even congregational context But we did begin to investigate the significant number of grants that are provided by private foundations across a whole wide range of different categories. So we looked at all of the 990s that have been filed by private foundations in the United States between 2003 and 2019. And those grants, they ranged from $25 all the way up to $12.2 million. In total, there was more than $290 million that was invested in the support of ministry leaders over that time period. So the issue is not that we lack resources. The issue is that there is this disconnect. So you've got folks on, you know, the pension benefit side or the funding side or the denominational side that aren't necessarily in conversation. It's as if Aaron and her are not speaking the same language or not even talking to each other to begin with. And so it produces this kind of this diffuse type of support that, you know, the end clergy person or the end pastor or ministry leader that's working in the congregation, you kind of get the support from like many different sides, and it's diffuse because there's not a sense of coordination, of shared goals, of understanding what are the root causes, or even common language to name what are those categories that need to be addressed most specifically.
So the money's there, but maybe the money's not talking to the systems, or there's no systems in place to support the pastors, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Katie, what else would you add to what I've just said there?
I mean, I think, you highlight the main point of, you know, just that disconnect and the implications of it for the clergy person, the pastor on the other end, and, you know, what they have access to, especially when, you know, maybe you're in a rural location and the money hasn't quite reached the rural location because the urban center is, you know, receiving more of the money. You know, people haven't quite communicated that where you're located is where funding needs to go towards. So,
yeah, good. All right, Thad, wrap this up for us. Let's put a bow on it. So why is it important? Obviously, we don't want people leaving the ministry. Obviously, we want them fulfilling their calling, leading their flocks well, being healthy to do that. So why is it important that pastors are supported?
Yeah, I mean, it's in the implications, because as Katie mentioned earlier, you cannot have a healthy congregation without a healthy clergy person. It's a necessary, essential ingredient. I mean, and beyond just the institutional structures that we have and we love, or that we kind of tolerate at times, being in a better place, this gets to the lives of real people. This gets to the sharing of faith from a pastor to their child. You know, and I think about the number of pastors' kids that grew up hating the church. Like, what does it say about our presentation of the gospel that if you lead a church, you know, there's a significant likelihood that your offspring will hate the church? Like, what does it say about how we do church that's the case? And so if we are able to better support our ministry leaders, we think that we will have more healthy clergy, more healthy staff members, more healthy congregations, and that can actually make a big difference in terms of the work of God outside of just the local context. So I'll give you a quick stat here. So in our process of interviewing the supporters of clergy, we asked them, it pre-COVID, because we knew that COVID could either have increased or decreased the number of clergy they were serving. We said, pre-COVID, how many clergy would you say in a typical year you serve? And just among the providers that we surveyed, the total came to almost 222,000 clergy. Now, let's just assume for a second that maybe there's a 50% overlap, because maybe one clergy person is supported by multiple providers. That's still 111,000 clergy. Imagine what it would be like if we were able to create the conditions for our religious leaders to thrive. Like, what would the presentation of the gospel, the kingdom of heaven, the way that we're able to incubate shalom into our world, how might that be different if our religious leaders were more excited about their calling, were more equipped to do the work of ministry? That instead of being beaten down, I talked with a person just the other day, and they said, you know, and this was a pastor's kid. He said, you know, as I looked at my dad serving in the ministry back in the 60s and 70s, he said, instead of seeing those supporters, the Aarons and hers alongside, instead I saw weights that were drawing his arms down. Well, what would it be like if we were able to cut some of those weights off and to better support and buttress our religious leaders? We think that the implications are societal. It's not just about the work of a local congregation. It's about the move of God here in and among our context and our day, seeing the kingdom come here on earth as it is in heaven.
I'll just add to that, you know, God loves our pastors, and for our providers that we study, like, to see one pastor, you know, better, you know, experience that calling in ministry meant the world to each of our providers. And, you know, in our interviews, we would ask them, you know, after talking for a half hour, 45 minutes about some of the depressing things that they're dealing with, that the challenges that they're facing, we would ask them, you know, where do you see God at work in your ministry? And each of them had a story of where they see God at work and the hope that they have for the future. So, yeah, you know, just being able to live into that and to know that God is at work, I hope, you know, can encourage us as we support our pastors.
I'm so glad that you guys have put this together. The book is called Caring for Clergy, Understanding a Disconnected Network of Providers. Go pick it up. It's a lot of research, a very deep research that I think people need to know, because it provides some context. It's not just our opinion. Oh, pastors are burning out, of course. It really gives some very specific research into why and how they need to be provided for, what areas they're burning out in, all of that. So thank you both for your time today, Katie, Thad. Really appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carl.
Hey, friends, I want to let you know about our service packs and our ready-made media library at 1230. These are collections of themed media content to allow your entire worship experience to match and theme together. We have holiday theme packs for special holidays at your church, like Mother's Day, Christmas, Thanksgiving. We also have beautiful anytime use packs with themes like nature, shapes, watercolor, stained glass, and more. We also have packs for events at your church, like weddings, funerals, baby dedications, and more. You can start downloading packs today at 1230.media/service packs. That's 1230.media/service packs.
The show notes for this episode are available now at makingsundayhappen.com.
Well, hey guys, thanks so much for joining us this week. Next week on the show, I'll welcome John Irwin. John is a director. He's helped direct movies like I Can Only Imagine and I Still Believe, American Underdog. Him with his brother Andy, they have produced and directed these movies. He is also involved directing and producing the brand new movie, The Jesus Revolution. That movie stars Kelsey Grammer and Jonathan Rumi, who you might know from The Chosen, also Kimberly Williams Paisley. And that movie is all about the beginning of the Calvary Chapel movement. Pastor Chuck Smith, Lonnie Frisbee, Greg Laurie, all about that story. I've seen a screening of this movie. It's really, really good. This is a great movie for you to take your church members to, maybe rent out a theater, that sort of thing. So we'll be talking with John next week about his history with church media and production, as well as the new movie, Jesus Revolution. So be sure to be with us next week for that. Well, go out there and create some incredible worship experiences this weekend at your church. I'll catch you next week.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit MakingSundayHappen.com.